This episode of The Treatment contains explicit content. Listener discretion is advised. From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it.
Good evening.
Thank you.
Please help me welcome the star of the movie, Casey Affleck, and one of the producers, Matt Damon. So, Casey, do you want to thank Matt again for not doing the movie?
Yes. Very much.
I want to thank Casey for doing the movie.
Tell me what you thought when you read the script the first time.
Oh, well, you know, I was supposed to direct it. And so when I read the first draft that Kenny sent, which was long and kind of meandering, but all of this stuff was in it somewhere. It was just so brilliant. And I just called him up and said, this is ridiculous. Like, you have to direct the movie. And he actually pushed back a little bit. He wasn't expecting to direct it. He hadn't planned on it. But I think he, at that point, he was so connected to the characters and really, and I do think I was right. I think probably the best thing I did as a producer of this movie was firing myself as a director. And so the way it came to the screen kind of unfolded, you know, kind of one step at a time. It was like I was supposed to direct it, and then I was like, Kenny, you direct it, and I'll be in it. And then we got it set up, and we were going to do it. And Casey had been reading every draft, and we had been talking about it, because Casey and I did one of Kenny's plays in London in 2002, and so we all knew each other from that.
And you did the movie together. You both worked with Kenny separately.
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess, you know, ultimately, because we couldn't get the version that of me doing it, because I had to start The Martian, and we kind of ran out of time. And there was this choice of like, well, do we wait 2 years till I can do it? Or, you know, and at that point, Kenny was really ready to go. And so we were like, well, let's, you know, get it set up with Casey. And it was kind of a lesson in that I've always said, but now I really believe that like a movie gets the actor they're supposed to get. Because this was clearly, you know, I mean, this performance is just so incredible. And I kind of look at it, I feel grateful to kind of all of these actors and to Kenny for writing that script and making the movie he made and all these, but what Casey did, I thought was just absolutely what should have happened. Sorry to say that in front of you.
Thank you.
What were you thinking, Casey, when you saw these different drafts that were coming through that Kenny was working on?
Well, they were all pretty good. The thing about Kenny's drafts is that they start out better than most people's scripts end up. He's just a really, really good writer, and he also takes his time. He wrote this for years. He worked on this script. And that's hard, you know, because you're sitting at home and you're alone and you're not doing other stuff and you're working on something and very rarely sharing it with people. And, you know, most people who are as talented as Kenny is, they rewrite other people's projects and they make a lot of money doing it and they kind of crank things out. And Kenny cares a lot about what he writes. And the things that he's written, plays and scripts, they are finished pieces all to themselves. You know, they're great to read and it's not just a blueprint for a movie. It's really a kind of a work of art. And so I read it and he said, you know, what do you think? And I told him how much I loved it. And I just thought at one draft, it seemed like it may have been a little bit too, I thought there could be more humor in it because I know Kenny's sense of humor. And he said, yeah, he was sort of already doing that. And that was, he did it. And I think that was the only suggestion that I ever made that was used in any way. But he really knows what he wants. And, you know, sometimes we're working on it. Matt knows this from doing the play with him as well. And that he's like, you know, you'd say, why do I say this? Even the tiniest little thing, you know, yes instead of an aha, or vice versa. And he would say, well, why wouldn't you say that? Well, and you'd have a long conversation about it. And he would have an answer for everything. There was not a word in the script that he hadn't thought carefully about, and he didn't. And if you asked him a question about it, he knew exactly why he had written it that way. There's no improvising in the movie, which, in some cases, is a way of. Oh, an easier way of playing a scene for an actor. If you kind of you're having a hard time with the scene, you can just change this or that little line, and suddenly it works for you. But with Kenny's writing, it's great writing, and you have to bring yourself to it and make it work. And the only stuff that wasn't written was the stuff that with the little boy at the very beginning of the movie on the boat. And even then, Kenny was on a boat 100 meters away with a bullhorn saying, "Ask him about his day." You know what he'd say? "How was your day?" So the early drafts were great.
Just from talking to him, knowing him a little bit, and talking to you about this too, he feels almost like an actor in that once he gets something in the system, he can't get rid of it. You know, he's got to follow it through. He doesn't hold ideas cheaply. He really latches on to them, doesn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was why I knew I could hook him to direct it. But I think it's because as Casey was saying, he thinks so deeply about this stuff. And
but it's like the way an actor prepares. The way when you talk to him, he says, "I don't know. I just wrote this thing."
Yeah, but that's kind of the first wall of defense. But he would say, I would suggest lines. I would say, I'm, you know, in the middle of the play, I'm going, you know, well. It feels like at this moment I'm in the middle of this play and I feel like I should say this instead of this. And he'd go, "Well, yeah, that was the line for a long time." And he would, you know, he'd say, "And here's why I changed it to this." You know, so he's thought so deeply about all of these things. Like they do, as you say, they get under his skin, and you know that's why he was the right person to do that. He was the only person to direct the movie. I mean, he could answer every single one of those questions, like everything an actor brings. And Casey, I think, is being humble about it. It's very hard to play as an actor because I think Kenny hears these things like music. He writes, if you read one of his plays or this screenplay, he has dialogue when the characters are talking over each other. The dialogue is laid out side by side. And you get screen direction that says in the parentheses, on the word "the," you know, so you know exactly when you begin your line, and then her line says "on this," and so it's literally absolutely choreographed like a symphony. And so as an actor, it's incredibly technical in the sense that you have to come with everything you have underneath so that those lines are full. When you see that scene with Michelle and Casey, you know, it is devastating, and like you feel like these people are having this conversation in front of you on the street. That thing I read and was crying my eyes out 5 years ago. You know what I mean? Exactly the way it is played, and what's incredible about the performances is that they are completely full, and underneath all of those lines are held by very, very powerful emotion. But it's very specific the way he writes.
But that's got to be a really, really a boon to you as an actor, just to have that much work, so you're not trying to fill in spaces that aren't on the page, isn't it?
Well, it means that. The scenes work, and you know that they work, and you can trust them. And it means that, you know, you can trust the director because he's the guy that wrote them. But it also means, as Matt said, that you have to sort of bring yourself to serving them in the right way. And you have to, you know, come to set able to do the emotion and play the scene in the right way while doing the lines exactly as they're scripted, which sounds sort of obvious. You think, like, well, isn't that your job? Everyone's supposed to say the lines. But they're not. Sometimes, you know, there's a very specific way that he wants it done, and Matt's right. It comes off like real behavior. It has a very naturalistic feel. The movie. It seems like, you know, real people in all those scenes, and it's a testament to his two things. One, how wonderfully his ear is for dialogue and for acting and stuff, but also like his love of actors because he. He didn't hire people who, you know, I kept saying, like, oh, there's this little part of the guy whose toy that I fix or whatever. Why don't we get, you know, the guy who's driving us, or why don't we get the, you know, one of the guys working on the crew? They're from this area. They have the accent. They're great guys. And he'd say, no, he'd bring in like some amazing Broadway actor who's always wanted to work in his play, so he'd know. And they would come to Boston and do a couple lines, and it's because Kenny has a lot of faith and actors, and he doesn't want to just cast the real person to get a naturalistic performance. He wants to cast who he thinks is a great actor.
Who can say his words exactly like he
wants.
Right.
Yeah. Kenny's kind of the greatest director who never wanted to direct in some way. He also, like, although he loves actors, I think he's really a writer at heart, and he doesn't, it's really hard work for him, which is, makes it, I think, that what he accomplished as a director all the more, because it's not, he's not someone who loves to be on set, and as he says, like, he's not like Steven Spielberg making short films when he was 4 years old. He was a writer, and he loves writing, and he loves working with actors.
Yeah, I remember when I did Margaret, I did a few days on his last movie, Margaret, and I remember coming to the set, and we had to shoot, because I was doing another movie, so the only time I could shoot was on weekends, so I showed up on Saturday morning at 6 o'clock or whenever, you know, which is not that early for us. I mean, we get up, you know, around 5 or whatever, and I get, and he's sitting there drinking his coffee. He's like on the Upper West Side, on Central Park West. And he's like, "How do you do this? This is horrible. Like, why do you get up this early? Why do you? You should be doing theater. This is like." So yeah, it doesn't come naturally to him.
But one of the things I, because you were saying to me before, Casey, that people keep saying this character is a loner. And I said to you, no, I think he doesn't want to be alone. He puts himself in these situations where he has to be around people. Like one of my favorite scenes is that scene in the bar where he's sitting there. He made a choice to go there. He wanted to be by himself, away from people. He'd be in his apartment, not talking to anybody. But he goes there and puts himself in a situation that's going to have to come to a bad end. But he's trying to force himself out to be social. And I think that's a really interesting subtle thing to do with a character, and it must have been incredibly hard to play, because this guy's always putting himself in situations that are going to make him uncomfortable and everybody else around him, but he's determined to be around people in some weird way.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought that he was determined to be around people, but I think he was determined to go through the paces of life, to go through, to have a job, hold the job, to, if when the doctor calls and says your brother's dead, to be the guy who shows up and takes care of the body, to sign the papers, to be responsible. He's very task-oriented, and he just wants to, you know, the last thing in the world he wants is to be irresponsible or let anyone down. So that's why he shows up in many instances, and this kind of central conflict of the movie depends on that attitude, because he feels like the last thing he's going to do is let his nephew down. He's not going to do it. On the other hand, the last place in the world he wants to be is this town, where he knows he's going to run into his ex-wife, where he's going to see people who think that he did something terrible and don't want him around, and he's going to be reminded on, you know, any time he comes around a corner, he's going to run into someone who's going to remind him of an unbearable sadness that he has in his life. And so he's kind of stuck. As for, like, going to the bar and doing all those things, I think that he sort of wants to, you know, Kenny said, like, maybe he wants to watch the game. He wants to do things that take his mind off of it until he can be
asleep.
He can
also do those things by himself. I mean, just going out into the world like that is setting these weird tensions into motion. And I just thought that was a really fascinating thing. And another of my favorite things, I've told you about this too, was on the phone with his wife, and he just keeps saying, "How are you?" And just you realize what that does. And it sounds like it's a kind of a mindless repetition, but in fact, every time he says it, there's a different response to it. And that's such an amazing scene. And what was it like to read that the first time you saw that on the page?
Well, the first time I read it, I sort of read it like it was, you know, sometimes you read a script and you just analyze it like it's a sort of, is this good, is this bad, are these scenes I can play, are they not, what am I following here, what's going to happen? And when I read the script, I was just sort of drawn into it as though it were, you know, a journal entry or some memory of your own. It seemed very realistic to me, and I cared about all the characters, and I... so that was the experience of reading it for the first time. But the way that Kenny, he writes like that often, where people they're repeating the same question, because I think people talk like that. But it's not just only to capture some kind of very similitude in people's mannerisms or speech. It's really, he's chosen those questions carefully, and I think he's asking her, "How are you?" because he still loves her, and because he really cares about her, and he wants her to know that he's not mad at her. And the same reason he says the things that he says when he runs into her on at the top of the hill there, and in person, and he says, "I am, I can't have lunch with you. I can't have coffee with you. But and you don't have to feel bad about anything you said to me. But you just have to know that I can't have coffee with you or have lunch with you because I won't be able to stand it. I won't be able to hold on to myself and be in your presence. But please don't let me hurt your feelings anymore. He just, you know, he's very careful not to hurt people's feelings or to be rude to people. But on the other hand, he just can't bear to have a human interaction with anyone, which is why, like, when the doctor asks him, you know, in those sorts of situations, the doctor will say, I'm so sorry, your brother's died. He was a nice man. And you'd say, a normal person might say, thank you, doctor, I appreciate that. Yes, we're all very sad, or some sort of, exchange of, and he doesn't. He just says, he keeps everyone at sort of arm's length. He doesn't want to have that kind of human interaction because it would be, not because he doesn't feel things or he doesn't care about people, because it's too painful to have those kinds of, once he starts to say, thank you very much, yes, I loved him too, he would immediately just crumble because he's not quite able to hold on to himself. He still feels so fragile.
What did you think of the character, Matt? Did you like this guy on the page? Because he's really trying so hard to be in his way, I think, social, and just unable to do it.
No, it's the best character, and which Kenny reminded me of many times. It really was the best character I've read in my career. When I read it, and I just went, man, for a best lead role, I mean, just that had come across my path. Definitely, you know, because he's in this unbelievable pain. There's just so much to play, but at the same time, as Casey said, he does come through, like, in these incredible. He does try, you know. It's like you see him trying, like when the kid's freaking out about the meat in the freezer. It's like he's trying. He literally says, "I don't know what to do." Like he. You know, he's like, if you're going to freak out, then we got to fucking find somebody to deal with this, because I can't deal with this. You know what I mean? But it's the same guy who's like strong enough to break the door down to make sure the kid's okay. He's going to make sure the kid's okay. Like, he's going to follow through on these responsibilities. He's an incredibly, like, wonderfully drawn character, you know, who's just incredibly rich, and just there's just so much to play. Yeah, I loved it.
And it's such an honest movie, because that scene you're talking about with the chicken is just... You can't help but laugh, and it's so awful at the same time. There are always these competing tensions in this material, aren't there?
As in life, yeah. I mean, our most painful moments are so absurd. If you could sit outside them and look at them, they're incredibly absurd a lot of the times, and they revolve around conversations like that, like two grown men in a kitchen, like, talking about frozen chicken, like, you know, and it means everything to them at that moment, you know, and that's what's so beautiful about his writing. And, you know, in these performances, I mean, Casey said something to me. I remember during post-production, we talked about the lack of self-awareness of the characters, which is something that's kind of too prevalent in, I think, most movies, where, you know, you just feel that, you know, you feel this kind of need for people to, like, kind of bring you to some catharsis and sort of through their own pain or something. You know what I mean? Like, these characters have none of that. You're just kind of observing there. You know, them just trying to make it through the day, and you know, and all the banalities of situations like this. And you know, when someone dies, it's not like in a movie, you don't just fade out and cut to the funeral. I mean, you got to fucking deal with the body, and you got to deal with this, and you got to talk to this person, and all of these really uncomfortable and awkward conversations, which are awkward anyway, but then you put Lee with his situation in there, and then this conflict of, like, now his brother is this kind of, in this incredible dying act, has made him the guardian and is forcing him to re-engage with his life. You know, other movies would make a big point of that. Other movies would make this a triumph. In fact, like, when we went to Sundance with this a year ago, that was one of the big questions. Somebody stood up and said, why doesn't he triumph at the end? And Kenny said, you know, he goes, a lot of great movies are made about people overcoming things. Like, some of my favorite movies are these incredible people against all odds overcoming these things. He goes, but some people don't get over things. You know, some people, you know, have something like this and are in a state of grief and they can't get over it right now. And those people deserve a movie too. And when he described the movie to me after the first draft and when we were talking about it, I said, what do you, so how is this going to end? He said, well, I want people to feel like Lee is not okay, but that maybe he's going to be okay in like 5 years. And it's like, that's the big finish. And when you look at that movie, that's exactly what it feels like. He can't move back to Manchester, but he moves 20 minutes away. He moves closer, and he gets an apartment with another room. And the kid says, well, I'm not going to come. He goes, well, it's a room where I'm going to put my shit, you know? But you see him, like, he really came a long way, and he's not there yet, but, like, maybe in 5 years he will be.
What you're talking about is this thing that was the reason the movie stays with you so much, because, first of all, as you're sitting through, you basically... I realized when I saw it at Sundance last year, I was kind of white-knuckled the entire time because that moment of explanation, that catharsis, where we get to sort of give a sigh of relief, never comes in this movie. And it just must have been exhausting to play this thing.
Yep. It sort of was. There were moments that in the flashbacks when he's before the tragedy, when he's a happier person, and those were moments that were really fun to play. And not because only because Michelle Williams is so great, but also because they were just, you know, they were happier times.
So you had two good days on this.
Yeah,
movie.
Yeah. you know, I think that there also were moments of hope, sort of very, very carefully planted in there. There was a scene where I drop the kid off, and his girlfriend's mother is there. And we did a few takes where it was as if he was totally incapable of engaging with someone like that, sort of in the way I treated the woman at the bar, where she was trying to talk to me, and I literally didn't even respond to her. And then we did a few takes where with the mother where you could see that I sort of was looking at her from like... studying as though I wasn't there, like, oh, that's right, this is a woman and I'm supposed to be like women and talk to them. And then you did some where you saw that he was already sort of thinking, maybe I could spend my life with someone like this, maybe I can be a human being again, maybe I could love again. And so there were just in the teeny tiniest little moments he was trying to, I think, try
hedge his bets.
Let you know, people know that it wasn't going to be just a guy who couldn't ever get over anything, but that there might be life later. And there was an ending to the movie that was a scene we just didn't get to shoot. It was another flashback of the whole family on a boat, and they're out in the sea, and there's a lot of other boats around. The whole kind of community's out there, and a whale jumps up. They're all sort of whale watching, and in the summer in that part of the country, there's always whales out there, and it's a very short scene of we're all in the boat together and a whale jumps up and everyone goes, oh, ah, you know, and it's just like a beautiful day with your family. And that was going to be the last scene.
And the camera
of the
movie pulls back and sees all these other little boats. So it's essentially, this is one family and these are all these other families. And so this is like this one story amidst all these other stories. It was beautiful. We ran out of money, so we couldn't. We couldn't shoot that, but we have a good ending, I think.
Yeah, it's good.
It was a very short, beautiful, very expensive scene.
Did we record this? Matt Damon ran out of money? I just want to make sure we heard you say this right.
I think they could have found the money had they wanted to. Their producers are all pretty great. It was expensive to do, but I think he liked it as it was, maybe, because the sitting with the boy on the boat fishing sort of said something a little bit smaller and more personal. But also, the way that all of the flashbacks are sort of intermingled with the rest of the story, such that you have, without any transitions, you have these like really, really hard, heavy scenes, and then he just cuts back to a much lighter scene from an earlier time. And both those time periods, the stories in both those time periods are unfolding at the same time. Sort of, although Kenny would never admit it, I think it was sort of as if to say that, like, all that's all part of life. Those really the hardest, worst times and your happiest memories, they're all kind of jumbled up and they can't be picked apart from one another. And so ending it on a flashback of the happy family on the boat, or of the two of me and the boy fishing together, kind of said the same thing too.
To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.